If I didn't feel like it, I wouldn't push it to the point where I dreaded it. That was going to be a lighter day, and I was going to do the best I can and get through. Then on a good day, of course, I'd do more. But I think to demand the same level at your highest peak on a bad day is frustrating. It's more unreasonable. You're going to have good days and bad days. On a bad day, lower your expectations. Get through the best you can and say this is going to be a recuperation day where you're still going to do something. And then once you get recuperated a little bit, then you'll be able to apply your full force.
You're listening to a special edition of the AMS Excellence Podcast. This podcast is dedicated to the discussion of strategic best practices related to associational missions. Here's your host, Rick Curtis.
Hey team, it's a really special day on this special edition AMS Excellence Podcast. Our guest today is Lance Ringnald, world championship gold medalist, two-time Olympic gymnast, 1988 Seoul, Korea, and 1992 Barcelona, Spain. And we're here talking about being the best that you can be wherever God has placed you. You may hear a bit of noise in the background as we enjoy lunch together here, but one thing is for sure, noise or not, you are going to love this edition of the podcast. Hey Lance, it's a real honor to have you here today.
Happy to be here.
So Lance, when it comes to being the best that you can be, I can think of no better example of that than being an Olympic level gymnast. Can you share with us, were you always driven at the levels that we saw from you at the Olympics?
You know, I think I was fortunate. From a young age, my mom and dad were gymnasts, so I had that exposure to gymnastics. And I had a pretty vivid imagination. I actually wanted to be a superhero, like the Hulk or Superman. Gymnastics was my, it was really cool actually, because that imagination kind of, it just promoted my engulfing gymnastics and being just obsessed with the sport, frankly. And my expression of being a superhero was kind of fulfilled through gymnastics. You know, I think I was always driven to be a gymnast because it was so satisfying. The physical feeling of feeling like you're flying or feeling in almost absolute control of your body, it was just gratifying and fulfilling. So I think the work to become better at that was very natural because the more time I put into it, the more flight and more power I had, the more I was developing in my imagination as a superhero. And I think that spread into other things later, because when I invested that time just having fun and trying to be a superhero, as a side effect, suddenly I was becoming proficient in gymnastics. And I applied that formula to a lot of different things as I grew up, and the same formula I applied always yielded me results. And it feels good to be good at something, and it feels good to grow at something. And so when I asked, was I always driven, I think I got some really good results at a young age just because I enjoyed doing something that I knew when I wanted to learn something else, even if I didn't have the same joy for it, eventually when I got some results and grew at it, I would enjoy it. And that allowed me to stick with it for as long as I could to develop in that.
Hey, I really appreciate the way that you convey that, because we all understand in leadership that satisfaction and results come in time. It's not something that instantly happens overnight. And that plays into a lot of what we deal with on the field. As you know, we spoke about it earlier. Today's audience of this podcast is primarily our field strategists. They're called AMSs, or Associational Mission Strategists. And they're on the ground trying to do the best that they can do, be the best that they can be every single day for our pastors. They are leaders of leaders. What would you say to a guy who's living his lifestyle to be the best that he can be in all things, and he's really driven by excellence?
You know, the short answer is I'd be realistic about your goals. I'd understand truly and realistically that it's not always going to be glamorous. You know, there's some hard times. I was talking to you earlier about this. When you want to become flexible, you start stretching, and then it becomes difficult. And that's where so many people give up. But that's the part where you actually make the most growth. Once you get past the uncomfortable phase of stretching, then you develop flexibility. So we talked about this earlier as well. Consistency, I think, is very underrated. You know, when you strive and consistently do something, you naturally grow with it. And over a long period of time, even if you don't see the growth, you wake up one day and suddenly you say, wow, look, I'm at this Olympic level. You know, I didn't plan on being that way tomorrow, but with the consistency and persistence, I grew and developed in this. And that allowed me to have a much stronger cause and effect on the world around me, the people I dealt with. It allowed me to have a formula for learning from other people. I could go on and on about that, but it's, in short, consistency.
Yeah, I think that's a great lesson. This is something I've always wanted our guys to hear, because I think they wake up every morning so excited about their work. It's almost like, hey, I'm going to be excellent today. And you can't be excellent every day. You got to put in the work every day. And over time, you build that excellence and you become better than you were the day before. And I think that's a very consistent way to look at those things that we're doing. Along with those successes, though, as leaders, we all face things going differently than we expected. No one understands that like a gymnast, a one fall or one tear of a muscle. Talk about the mentality of setback.
Well, I'll start with this story. In 1991, I was in the middle of World Championships, and I was on the rings, and halfway through my routine, I tore my pectoralis major off my humerus. It's a major injury, and I had to come down in the middle of the routine. This is 1991, the year before the Olympics. So I was faced with the challenge of trying to get back healthy enough to make the second Olympic team. So I had that objective. That drove me. But I had no idea how to get back. This is new territory. So I used the same formula, persistence. I wanted to say this about the previous question, too, and you can cut it in. But it's almost like a casual pursuit of something. I'm not melodramatic. When I fail, I don't like it. It feels bad. But it's part of the process. And I learned that early on as a gymnast. Because once you get back and getting going, you're going to have your high points and your low points. You learn from the low points, and you enjoy the high points and have them feed you for the next adventure or the next challenge. Going back to the injury, because it was uncharted territory, I had very broad expectations. I didn't have any specific expectations. I knew that it took one day at a time, and just like that flower that grows over time, eventually I got stronger, I got back, with no guarantee I was going to make the Olympic team. But I think, you know, I simply made up in my mind, I want to do everything in my power to get back to the Olympics. No matter what happens at the end of that, if I've done everything in my power, that's all I can do. I'll have a peace with it no matter what. But I really wanted to make the Olympic team. I knew what it felt like to be an Olympian. And so it was easy to wake up every morning and do therapy. People say it must have been very challenging. I didn't like not being capable as a gymnast. But over time, I knew that my best shot to reach my objective was to consistently pursue rehab and get back to the best shape I could to give me the best chance to make the Olympic team. Once again, it's consistency and persistence. And I do believe you have to have miniature successes. We're human. I don't have a lot of distinct expectations. You know, when I fail, I don't like that, but it's so casual. It's normal to me. I became very used to failing. And then it never stays in the failure position. It goes back to, hey, I'm back to a pretty good level. And then you're going to hit that pinnacle where like, wow, I'm moving forward. And so you just kind of roll the roller coaster. It becomes normal to you, and that allows you to be persistent more naturally over time.
That's a great way to put it. As a gymnast, everybody, you know, it's funny because we talked about it earlier too. Everybody shows up every 4 years to watch the Olympics, and it's like the number one watched thing on all the ice skating and gymnastics seem to take all the glory of the Olympics from every other athlete. It's crazy. And I fall into that. I never miss gymnastics. That is the event for my wife and I. But we don't see the hard work that goes in for four solid years, day in and day out, making yourself better, striving to be excellent at every routine, every move, everything that you guys do. And so these guys that are listening to the podcast today, they're working on a kingdom basis. The things that they're doing are changing the kingdom. And nobody sees that on a regular basis. It's just like kind of like the Olympics. It's a good analogy. We don't see all the work that these guys listening put in every single day. So what I'd like you to do is speak into how do you get past that morning when you're 2 years from the Olympics and you're putting in the work every single day and you wake up and you just say, I don't want to do this anymore. But you know that there's that big goal 2 years down the road. How do you dig deep and make it happen?
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of psychological games we use for that too. But, you know, frankly, when I woke up feeling bad, I wouldn't do as much in the gym, but I would go and I would give what I had. You know, if I didn't feel like it, I wouldn't push it to the point where I dreaded it. That was going to be a lighter day and I was going to do the best I can and get through. Then on a good day, of course, I'd do more. But I think to demand the same level, your highest peak on a bad day, it's frustrating. It's more unreasonable. You're going to have good days and bad days. On a bad day, lower your expectations. Get through the best you can and say this is going to be a recuperation day where you're still going to do something. And then once you get recuperated a little bit, then you'll be able to apply your full force. And also about the cause and effect of our actions, I say this a lot. If you want to appreciate something, try doing it. And I talk about this with the connection with people, you know, because you could tell me five different ways how to do something, and I wouldn't get it. And the sixth time I go, oh, I get it. You know, and trying to connect with what makes a person tick, because we talk a lot about motivation. You know, what drives you to get up? What do you think about every night before you go to bed? What do you think about every day when you wake up? And for me, I've got my pearls of wisdom. I'm cause and effect. I need a challenge to make me participate in the world potently. When you're talking about a four-year term goal, that's a long time. If I'm thinking 4 years out, it's almost overwhelming. So you literally take one year at a time, one week, one month. You take it in increments. And then you see your progress in the short term. If you don't have short-term successes, it's very hard to stay hungry for the following year and the next year. So there's nothing wrong with having a long-term goal that you're always moving toward. But in order to reach that goal, you have to do you have to make progress on the short term. So when I was not feeling motivated, when I say we played games, say I walk in the gym and I just don't feel like training. So we made our training into a game. Here's an example. I had my other teammates on the pommel horse, and the workout was just overwhelming. I didn't want to do it. So we chose to play the game add-on. So one gymnast would do a skill, then the next gymnast would do that skill and add his own skill.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was wonderful. And what happens, you get a short-term goal in the game. Nobody wants to lose. So you're applying all your force and energy. At the end of that game, you're doing 30 different skills. You're training your tail off. You're getting in great shape. And you've circumvented the everyday routine of that workout. So this little side game allowed us to, you know, push ourselves to new levels and also have fun while we're doing it in that short term. So I'm a heavy proponent of playing games and finding new perspectives to do the work that's necessary to reach your objective over the long term.
That's incredible. Hey, let me ask you, on a personal note, do you find inspiration in your other gymnasts? Do they drive you or propel you? Is there healthy competition? I know if you were to poll these guys, they would have a general sense about who's doing the best in one area and who's doing the best in another area. And I think we've encouraged them to brotherhood together and to learn from each other and sharpen each other's iron and that kind of thing. But whenever you get a large crowd and you're all kind of competing in that same kind of arena, talk to us a little bit about how the competition can almost drive you to excellence.
That's a great question. Because when I trained for the Olympics, I trained with two other world-class gymnasts, Cheney Humphrey and Trett Dimas. We were all extremely different in personality and extremely different in body type. And that diversity, it is the reason why I made any Olympic team, because of each other. Hmm. I would watch Cheney do a skill a certain way, and I thought, maybe I'll try his approach. He's stronger and bulkier. Then you got Trent Dimas over there, who's got a long, lanky body, and I go, never thought about trying it that way. Through their diversity, it opened my mind to new approaches, to new skills. We always want to be the best, but I'm responsible for myself. I can't control what they're going to do in competition, but when I watched them grow and learn, it gave me tons of ideas of how to approach my own skills, but also it showed me where the bar was, what I had to become better than. So it was very healthy. These are my war buddies. These are a lot of empathy between us because we're training for the same objective. So I think I don't know that any one of us would have made an Olympic team if not for each other, because we brought the best out in each other. So I believe in that synergy. We were more than the mass of our parts.
That's great. Yeah, what a great word that is. Just a few more questions. I know earlier you had shared that there are many other areas that you're trying to learn new skills, and we mentioned playing the piano and even juggling, whatever. One of the areas that you're particularly gifted at is memorization. You're a mnemonist, which means that you work on improving your memory. And, you know, I've watched you talk about that and how you get excited about that. And again, it just brings me back to, man, this guy is driven. He's driven in everything, even juggling. You're driven. Talk to us about the memory thing and how that is also just part of this drive about being a better person, being a more skilled person.
Okay, this is a loaded question, so I'm going to answer in several parts. So some things came very naturally. I'll use the gymnastics analogy before I touch on the memory. In gymnastics, I would do a very difficult skill and it would come very easy. Then sometimes I try an easier skill and it took me forever. Piano came pretty natural to me. I understood it. Juggling, I needed anger management classes. It was so frustrating. I was surprised how long it took me to learn some of these skills. So I learned pretty early on, lower my expectations. Some things will come fast, some things won't. What I was intrigued with and fascinated by with the whole memory world is you get really strong, powerful results in a very short time. And those results feed you. Everyone, when you get some results from your efforts, you start believing in it. You want more of that. So it'll facilitate you to go get more of that and to train harder. When you struggle for too long, it's a deterrent. You know, it takes a disciplined person to stick with something they don't like for too long. And frankly, something I don't like, it's hard to stick with. That's why we played these games, to circumvent the unpleasantry when we didn't like it, to make something we don't like into something we do like. If you can do that, that means you like everything. Therefore, there's nothing you won't do or become proficient at. That's the goal, because the biggest deterrent for people to pursue something is not enjoying it. We're human. So memory, I saw these fascinating results. I was so shocked with I got in such a short period of time that were impressive to my friends, the cause and effect for my friends. Wow, look, Lance can memorize a deck of cards in 1 minute. Or look at all the names he knows. And then I could teach this very quickly and give them the same results. The cause and effect of learning memory was very quick compared to the process of learning juggling. Or even piano took a long time. But I generally enjoyed those things. as I said, with the exception, juggling was challenging. In the short of that, 3 and 4 balls was very easy. Juggling 5 balls took anger management.
Yeah.
Because there's more balls in the air than you have hands. This is a good point. Once you master 5, the whole world of juggling opens up to you. It's like reaching a transformation, a whole nother level. And again, like flexibility, if you can breach that one super hard limit, then there is a whole nother side that opened up to me. Once I mastered the fundamentals of 5, then 6 and 7, even 8 and 9, they came much easier.
Well, I had to laugh when you told me that you first remembered my name, because I was a big bald guy and you envisioned a rake moving over my head for Rick. And so the whole idea of mnemonic memory and association and associating things is very intriguing. And I took an early memory class many, many years ago, and I still memorize things mnemonically as well. If our guys wanted to find out more about that, about how to memorize faces and names and how to commit other tasks that they need to do to memory, where can they find out more information, not only about the memory stuff, but about you and about what you do? Where can they go to find more information?
From my website, it's lanceringnall.com, www.lanceringnall.com. And it's a 3-week program of drills, that one drill every single day that will lead you up to more difficult and demanding memory challenges that require you to apply the proper memory method. So first of all, you've got to learn about the primarily 8 essential memory methods. Once you learn those and you've got kind of a foundation, then you can apply them to any memory tasks that you have. And the program is designed to facilitate that in a slow basis. But over 1 month, you can memorize several decks of cards. It's phenomenal what you can do in a short period of time.
Hey, so I told you about these guys. They're out there working day in and day out to help pastors take things to the next level. You understand leadership, you understand discipline, you understand striving for excellence. I know you're a Christian. What would you say to these guys just to encourage them in their work?
I believe in this life, there are so many ripples we do not see. I think we will pass this life, but right now, if you just try to be very conscientious of the effect we have, the passive hello to a person, how it affects somebody, all the small things make up the bigger picture. And I know this sounds a little overly philosophical, but it's how I view things. It's meeting you passively. You know, I may never see you again, but this little nexus in a meeting, it has a greater effect than we ever get to see here. And so the smallest thing is not without value. And the hard day, it's okay to have hard days. You know, I think that's what builds our character. That's where we learn from in general. You know, the easy days, we just enjoy. The hard times, you learn how to reevaluate and tweak your methods to be more productive in the world. But as I've gotten older, I value the simple things. I value my relationships much more, because in the end of it, we're all here for each other. I mean, life is essentially about other people's lives. But I try to soak up what positive effect I hope that I'm having on the world. And on a Christian level, how that honors my God, my Father. And I want to do what I believe is good and right. And it fulfills me. That drives me to do more of that. You know, and it's an everlasting cycle. When you learn something and you get some results, it feels good. And when it feels good, you want to do more. So you go do it more. And then you get better. And it feels good. And that eternal cycle is the most productive cycle we can find. It's the same way when you interact with people. When you share someone or connect with someone or affect someone, not in a preachy, I want you to do this way, but just in sharing who you are, it shows people another perspective, another way. Just like my teammates, they approach things very differently than me, but as their model, it opened my mind to new ways to approach other people and other skills and everything in general.
Okay, so Lance, as we wind this thing down, I'm known on my podcast for asking a final question, but I'm going to give you a different final question than I give all my other guys, because you started off talking about superheroes and that whole kind of thing. So let me ask you, it's a two-part question. Who is your favorite superhero? And part number two is, what was your favorite cartoon growing up as a kid?
Favorite cartoon is easy. When I was very young, Scooby-Doo. I loved it. I had these red Scooby-Doo boots. I watched it every day. Then I got older and evolved on to Flintstones, because it was on exactly when I got home from school. And then they changed the TV schedule, frankly, and then Woody Woodpecker came on, so that became my favorite cartoon. If I had to choose a general youthful cartoon, Scooby-Doo. I just, it's stimulating for a little kid, the dog and the pet and the story and the challenge of the what's the mystery. Now, I know a lot of superheroes. I'm a fan of superheroes, and it's a multifaceted question, because you could do the ultimate power, Dr. Manhattan, who can control all matter. You know, he can pretty much do anything he thinks. But he also has a lacking connection with humanity in the human perspective, because he sees such a broader picture. So for the power, Dr. Manhattan. Superman, there's so many facets from him, because of what he stands for. Goodness, his cause and effect, his nature is to help. You know, the Hulk, I love the Hulk. His nature's not always to help, but I love the energy, the power. And I think we kind of interpret the energy of the Hulk as potential, what we could do, the power of doing what we want. He can't control it, but I think it's what appeals about the Hulk is the power and the release of that power. Because power is essentially potential. He can't control it. And this is a long answer to the favorite superhero, but I have so many. Dragon Ball Z is a Japanimation. I love Goku. And it's funny along these lines. This is why. It's a cartoon. He is always trying to ascend to the next level. And I love the dynamic where two foes come together to fight a worse foe. That's really, it's a redundant theme in that series. But he's never satisfied until he reaches the next level. And he's always finding transformations of finding another level that they didn't think was possible. So my favorite cartoon in general, favorite superhero, happens to be a cartoon. But it's Japanimation. It is separate. So I'd say Goku, or Kakarot is his alien name. Oh man, this is a hard one. You're talking about so... Because there's also the Phoenix, and there's Dr. Xavier that can control the mind. I mean, man, this is I could talk about this forever. I don't know... Okay, go ahead. Because I don't know if I could choose one.
That's awesome. Hey, for you guys listening, one big takeaway from today's show is never ask an Olympic gymnast who his favorite superhero is. You will never get an answer. But I love that. Okay, so let's wind up with this. Between Scooby-Doo and Goku, who would make a better Olympian?
Absolutely Goku. Because he always finds a way. There's nothing he couldn't learn. He will not give up. Scooby-Doo would probably have fun, but he'd just trip over his feet. Goku's potential, because he's very physical. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer when you compete those two. But then there's also facets of Olympian. Physically the best Olympian, the best role model. Actually, Goku's a really good role model. If you don't know anything about him, he's just a good person. He's a pure-hearted warrior, they call him. So okay. Anyway, that's a short answer.
All right, very good.
Well, thanks a lot, Lance. I really appreciate you spending the time with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Rick. Been a lot of fun.
Once again, my special guest today is Lance Ringnall, World Championship gold medalist and two-time Olympic gymnast. God bless you.
You have been listening to the AMS Excellence Podcast. For more information or to contact the North American Mission Board's Associational Relations Team, send an email to associations@namb.net.